Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, our adventures near and far, as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Melanie, what you drinking?
Amaretto sour.
What's in an amaretto sour? Amaretto.
What's in an amaretto sour or what's in my amaretto sour?
What's in your glass? What's in my glass, by the way? That's my USS Cerritos glass that I got from...
It was the perfect size.
It is the... I just picked it up this past fall. It's awesome. It's from the TV show Cerritos. And it has the Star Trek logo, except it has a toothpick with an olive going through it.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
It's awesome. Anyway.
Okay, that's cool.
What's in my glass?
So, amaretto plus orange juice. We had that bottle of orange juice that needed to be used up.
Yep.
And some fresh squeezed lemon juice and some citrus simple syrup, which was left over from making candied orange, lemon, and lime peels for my fruitcake.
Nothing goes to waste in our house.
You know, you get when you're done candying your citrus peels, which is an important part of making fruitcake.
We'll talk about that in a bit.
Which we'll talk about in a bit. Then there's this beautiful syrupy sludge left in the bottom of the pan.
You make it sound so appetizing.
You might be tempted to just discard it as like, but no. This is gold.
Yes.
It's citrus simple syrup. It's just a simple syrup
that you can add to anything. It doesn't even have to be alcohol.
In fact, I added some to my gingerbread, which we will also talk about later.
It was also going to come up. That's very nice.
And then some, you know, ice.
Awesome.
The proportions, I kind of looked at a recipe and then I completely ignored actual measurement and math because mathing was just too hard.
Splash here and a splash there.
It's just, yeah. It splashes until it tastes right and then adjust a little bit and then put some more splashes in just for fun.
Sure.
Yeah.
I was saying, like, amaretto is awesome. Like,
amaretto is awesome.
Because, you know, an almond liquor. And, like, I was drinking commercial eggnog last night during my D&D session, which we'll talk about in a second. And I had the eggnog and so splash of amaretto in there. It just tastes so good.
It does.
Amaretto is magical. Hot cocoa. It's amazing in hot cocoa.
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. I mean, it's just for me, it reminds me of my aunts and uncles, my grandparents, my grandmother going to my dad's family and having, you know, amaretto drinks and Blue Nun and wine. Was Blue Nun a liquor or wine?
I thought Blue Nun was a wine.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Well, and then, there was this long, tall bottle. I can't even remember. All these weird, like, liqueurs and stuff that they would all drink. But I definitely remember amaretto from that. It's funny.
I don't know the first time I had amaretto. It was definitely not
in college.
Probably college. Yeah. I did not drink a lot in college, but until my Rome semester and then, you know.
No. You were the type of girl who didn't drink in college. But when she drank mixed drinks, weird mixed drinks.
No. When I did drink, I usually drank Guinness.
Well, okay. That's true.
Okay, occasionally we had like girly mixed drinks, but it was usually when a girlfriend gave me one.
No, it's not so much girly mixed drinks, but just like weird mixed drinks. Like you'd be the type of to have absinthe.
Never had absinthe.
That's totally not you. That is totally not you. No, you are the Guinness drinker.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a friend giving me like Cape Cod's mm-hmm. vodka and cranberry juice. Not my favorite, but you know, it was drinkable.
Bull. Cranberry juice.
I like cranberry juice. Okay. It needed a little bit more of something. It needed a little splash of something.
Something sweet.
Yeah.
Counteract the sour.
Like that might be good with like a citrus syrup or a, you know, something like to jazz it up a bit.
There must be a mixed drink that does that kind of twist the Cape Codder into something sweeter.
Yeah.
Because tastes in cocktails have gotten more...
More sweet?
More sweet. There's less sours. You don't see whiskey sours like you used to. I used to drink a whiskey sour. That was really weird.
Yeah, I tried whiskey sour once because I had an amaretto sour and I got confused and I thought a whiskey sour was an amaretto sour. Like, I forgot.
Yep.
And it was a sore disappointment.
It was not the thing. What's the other one I was just thinking of? Well, it doesn't matter. Anyway, amaretto sour. I'm drinking iced tea because we were out of eggnog and I'm sad. So let's talk about what we've been doing. Enough of that. So we are continuing to unpack. It is like we've moved.
The only thing we didn't pack up the kitchen, which thank God, mostly.
Well, we did pack some of it up.
But when we moved back in, I had to wash everything in the kitchen, take everything out of the cabinets, wash it all,
every
and put it back.
Every single blessed thing. So it's essentially like we moved the kitchen, too.
Right. Just
the only thing we didn't move was this office.
Right.
So, yeah.
And the messy laundry room, which I still haven't unburied.
Oh, yeah. That's at the end of the list.
It's kind of scary, though. Yeah. Well, we're still living out of duffel bags and suitcases until I can unbury the laundry room, essentially.
Well, the kids lived out of piles on the floor before that anyway, so it was a bunch of a big deal. But, yeah, so we've got the storage pod in the driveway that's going back on Thursday, and so it has to be emptied. Now, it's mostly emptied, but all those boxes have come in. So we've got...
And they've not all been unpacked.
No, and so now our living room... is full of boxes, mostly books, because we have a lot of books. A lot. I would say that a good 30% by volume of our possessions is books.
That's probably a fair estimate.
Yeah. I mean, furniture, maybe, you know, so if we take the furniture out of the equation.
Right.
Then I'd say even up to 50% of our possessions are books, because we get all the books in the office here that never got packed. We could fill a pod with books.
We could.
It's
easily.
It's a little insane.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's actually taking so long to unpack is I want to take the time to purge some of our possessions as we're unpacking them.
Yeah.
And not just mindlessly throw things back on the shelves that they came off of.
Right.
But that takes more time and more thought.
More consideration.
And a lot more brain power, so I'm kind of moving slowly. I'm willing to live in the boxes a little bit longer.
A little bit longer. Because Christmas is coming. And we've got a Christmas tree, and it's on our patio, because there's no place in the house for the Christmas tree.
Well, we're not going to get completely unpacked before Christmas.
No, but there needs to be a little more unpacked, because there is no place for that tree. So we need to get the tree in the house.
No room in the inn. No room for the tree.
There's no room in the living room for the tree.
That's my priority for tomorrow.
Yes, we're working on that. We'll get to the buying the tree in a minute. So we're trying to get everything where it goes. So the repair work continues. So most of the repair work is done. As I was saying before, the old adage, 90% of the repair work takes 90% of the time to finish. And then the other 10% of the repair work takes the other 90%. Because it just seems like those little last things take forever. And
yes,
getting the carpenter to come back and do those little bits when he's got other jobs, bigger jobs that are taking his attention. And so
we're fitting into the little bits and cracks and
of time.
Crevices,
right.
Of time.
Now, we still, you know, there's still half about of the money we owe him that's still on the table. It still needs to be paid to him. We pay for all the materials up front and then half of his time. So we've paid for the materials and half of his time so far. And so the other half is still waiting for me to write checks to him for it. So, you know, that's... He's going to earn that. He's not getting that until it gets done. I mean, it doesn't have to be there's still things like the soffits that need to cover the new pipes and all that sort of stuff. But we've got the bathrooms, the grout in the floor done. All the baseboards are in.
Except the one in the living room that needs to be nailed
it's
down.
It's in. It just needs to get some nails on it. Yeah.
There's bits of paint here and there that need some touch-ups or that like things that got missed, like a couple of doors didn't get painted. That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that sort of thing is still ongoing, but getting closer. And then, so it won't be by Christmas. It won't be by New Year's. This stuff is, in fact, he said right up, like, I'm not going to get the soffits done until after New Year. So
yeah,
and I'm fine with that. I don't care. I just want to be able to, you know, have Christmas and have the house not look like a war zone.
High aspirations.
High aspirations. Yes, I know. Well, it's mostly not like a war zone. Now it just looks like a refugee camp.
This is true.
Yes. All right. So I mentioned that we got our Christmas tree. I thought, oh, this has to be the latest we've ever gotten our tree. It was not.
No.
Not
by a long shot.
Yeah. I've been looking at the historical record here, i.e. Facebook memories. And there are, like, we've gone as late as the week before Christmas. I know there are people out there who buy their trees on Christmas Eve and they end up with Charlie Brown scraggly trees because these days that's all you get left. People used to buy their tree on Christmas Eve, but now people don't and they buy them all early. But we usually go to Home Depot. I know, big box store. Why are you buying a tree from a big?
Sometimes we buy them. I think we're like 60% Home Depot, 40% small lots.
every once in a while, we get a December where we're mad at Home Depot.
Or like one year it was where we want to support the Scouts, or another year it was
There was a Scout tree sale a while ago,
long before our kids were Scout age. Yeah,
10 years ago maybe.
I don't remember what troop that was.
I have no idea. That's a good question, actually.
I think it was an Avon troop, though.
Oh, maybe. Maybe it was the original Troop 13.
Maybe.
So last year we got it from a local landscaper company. And this year it was just, I had to go to Home Depot to get some stuff for the house anyway. So, like, let's all go get the tree. And so we did that. There was plenty. We don't get giant trees, much to my chagrin.
We don't have room for a giant tree.
I've accepted this tale. We get the short tree that even I'm tall enough to reach. I'm taller than, probably. Brought it home, trimmed the bottom, stuck it in the stand on the patio until we can bring it in. It's sad, but it's there. Hi, tree.
But stand by the back door and kind of wave at it occasionally. Yeah.
Now, the tree will be in the house through Epiphany, you know, at least. Probably Baptism of the Lord at this point.
Right.
So we tend to keep the tree a long time. And in most years, that tree is pretty dry and fire hazard by the end. So maybe this time it won't be as bad.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And then I want to commend you. You made a decision that we were all going to go to confession this week before Christmas.
How many homilies? I think we've heard at that point, we had heard three homilies telling us that the main thing to do to prepare for Christmas was go to confession. when three different priests tell you that, you listen. I mean, that's obviously Jesus saying, go to confession, yes. Right?
Now, it's not, I mean, everyone, I get it. Like, going to confession can be a pain for most people, and there's trepidation and things like that. For us, it is the added difficulty of three children with anxiety disorders who have trouble going to confession. The idea of going to confession can be very difficult. This time it wasn't as bad.
I think all but one child went to confession.
Yes, all but one were able to go. The last one was close, right? But just
made it to the church.
Made it to the church, but just the anxiety was too much, so that, you know, the Lord supplies. And we all got to go, which was nice. We got there nice and early, as you wished. In fact, before the doors were unlocked. And then we got inside. And then another family, big family, came in after us.
I felt so bad because, like, here's this mom with, like, I think she had five or six kids.
Yeah.
And they're waiting and waiting and waiting. And we weren't all, like, nicely sitting at the back. Like, some of the kids were wandering. And so, like, as they're waiting, more and more of our kids, like,
would go in ahead of them.
Kept approaching and going in ahead of them. And I felt so, like, awful. But
yeah,
I didn't want to tell the anxiety kids that they had to, like, let somebody else.
Yeah.
Or they had to sit still, or that they had to, like, let somebody else go first.
Right. Right.
So,
and because it's like most Catholic parishes, we have 45 to 50 minutes before Mass, the Saturday evening Mass, and that's the only time you have available to go to confession. And it's like, that's enough time for maybe 10 people.
Right. So you're essentially have given up on the idea of everybody in your parish going to confession more regularly than, like, once every 6 months.
Right.
Which is probably realistic, But is that the goal we should be setting?
They didn't even do an Advent penance service this year. So, no. Yeah, it's really. Yeah, if you well, that's the thing is you've had homily after homily telling us we need to go to confession, and then you don't provide confession times that would be sufficient for everyone to go to confession. So what you're saying is you don't expect actually people to follow through on what you've been telling them.
Right.
You can call and make an appointment. Have you ever called and made an appointment, folks?
One time I tried to call and make an appointment, and they told me what the parish confession times were and told me we could go then.
Right.
But the whole reason I'm calling is because that time doesn't work for me.
I need to make an appointment to go to confession. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, but we went and then while we were sitting there after I had gone and some of the older kids were sitting with me. And I think I started humming "O Come, O Come, Emmanuel" or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Bella started singing.
That was all she was hoping for a cue. And that was all she needed to get her going.
So she started singing. And then Sophie came and sat next to me on the other side, and she started singing it with her. And then Anthony and Lucy came over, and they were singing it too. And here we are in the church, and there's like, and there's people getting ready for Mass, and they're singing. The first they sang "O Come, O Come, Emmanuel." Then they sang "Once in Royal David City," and I think they did "O Come, Divine Messiah" too. Yeah, so it was beautiful.
This is almost a tradition at this point now because they've done it twice, but was it last year or maybe it was 2 years ago? We had gone to confession and they had not like a penance service, but they did have extra times.
Right. Extra priests.
Yep. And we had gone, but we were the only people in the church. It was us and the priest.
Right.
And, while the kids were waiting for me, actually, like while I was going to confession and the kids were all like outside waiting and
I was at work probably.
You were working and yeah. I couldn't go. But I'm in the confessional making my confession and I hear singing in the empty church and all five of our kids were singing Christmas songs and it was so beautiful. Like it was one of the most beautiful things I've heard. I just got like shudders of joy. And I could tell that Father was moved too. He didn't say anything, but I could kind of see like he was listening intently. And it was really beautiful. So I think that Bella was kind of hoping it would happen again, but was a little bit nervous, especially with so many people in the church. But all it took was you humming and that set her off.
Yes. By the way, who is the Cape Verdean priest with the deep voice? Father
Irineu,
right. Yeah, I remember going to confession with him once. He was really good.
Oh, yeah.
So they were singing. Yeah, it was beautiful. And of course, proud father, you know, my kids are making beauty in the church. Hopefully people liked it and weren't like, oh, I wish those kids would shut up. I'm trying to pray or something.
They weren't super loud.
No, they weren't singing it to the voice. They were kind of singing to themselves. They were singing audibly, but they were singing to themselves. So it was nice. It was. I'm kind of proud of them, actually, to be honest. They are turning out to be really good kids. We're wearing masks again at church. The Cardinal Sean has issued an order in the light of the recent events that from December 18th through at least January 17th, I think he said, we have to wear masks at masses. And I assumed at confession, too. I mean, if you can wear a mask, you have to wear my confession.
And yeah, and the priest in confession was wearing a mask, and
right,
everyone, people were gathering for mass. It would have been weird to,
yes, not. Exactly. So yeah, we're having to mask again at church. It's not great, not fun. The anxiety stuff is affected by that as well. So, but even kids without anxiety disorders can get a panic attack, you know, mild, but you know, start to panic. So it's not fun, but I do enjoy all the varieties of mask wearing. There's the chin strap where you're wearing it under your chin. Not sure how that's actually. I mean, technically, it's on your head. It's not doing anything. And then there's the periscope, which is where the nose pokes over the top. I see that one a lot. So it's amusing. Amusing. All right, so that's what we've been doing. Let's talk about the promised cooking that you've been doing.
Right.
You mentioned gingerbread?
Yes. we are in the middle of unpacking and cleaning, but I haven't baked since this whole adventure of being homeless started, and I've just been itching to make all of my favorite Christmas baked goods.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with gingerbread. Gingerbread's one of those things that, strangely, all of our kids like. I hated gingerbread as a kid, and I do not understand why our kids like it, but they do.
Well, a lot of gingerbread is over spicy. Like, so there's a lot of gingerbread where they overdo the ginger, and it's like eating a fireball in a cake form. It's way too much,
I suppose.
But yeah.
So yeah, mine is a. This time I made like an orange gingerbread. I added some orange zest, and like I said, I had that citrus syrup, and I added a little dollop of that to it too. Like, I didn't have quite enough molasses, so I filled up the gap with the citrus syrup. I was thinking, oh, I could make a simple syrup, or I could try to like mix brown sugar and water. And then I realized my citrus syrup was sitting right there. So it had a nice little pleasant orange flavor to it.
That's probably another reason why it was very popular this time.
But they've always liked it.
I know.
So that was fun. I love gingerbread. And I actually made a cream cheese frosting for it. Sometimes I leave it unfrosted and the kids they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy was a little bit trepidatious about the cream cheese frosting. She doesn't like it when it's too cream cheesy. So when I make it, I know she's going to eat it. I make it with like a whole stick of butter and a package of cream cheese and then enough sugar to make it thick.
Yep.
I added a little bit of the citrus syrup to the cream cheese frosting too. So it had a little slight...
Here's a
tip of orange.
When you're making your getting your butter and your cream cheese out, you want them to be room temperature, not by putting them on the stove and turning the oven on to 350.
It's not that I turned the oven to 350. It was when I pulled the gingerbread out of the oven, I didn't turn the oven off.
Remember to turn the oven off when you're done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which we had
the
we
butter
had,
melted all over the
well,
place.
Well, yeah, the contractors had arrived, and I like sort of went into my room to like do some stuff on my computer, which is like hiding in the bedroom right now. And yeah, I forgot to turn off the oven, and I wasn't in the room, and I didn't really want to go back and forth because they were like in the hallway in the bathroom doing work. And yeah, by the time I realized the butter was a melty pool.
Yes. I just say that because I don't want anyone to think that we bake perfectly or cook perfectly every time. We have our share of foibles and failures.
Yeah, but it came out okay.
No, the cake was great. Don't get me wrong.
The cake was good, and I just saved that melted butter for... Didn't you throw it in the butter curry?
I made butter chicken curry, so used the whole stick of butter. And it was fine. I mean, it had coagulated again and solidified again and threw it in the pot. So that worked fine. So talk about the fruitcake, though.
Right. I'm in the process of making fruitcake, but it keeps getting delayed because
everything
is so busy.
Yeah.
But I started my fruitcake. First, I started by making my own candied citrus. You can buy the pre-candied stuff, and I have in the past. Like, I am totally okay with buying the pre-made fruitcake fruits. But I had a whole bunch of orange and lemon and lime peels that I'd just been squirreling away in the freezer whenever I had a chance. So I wanted to go ahead and clear them out of the freezer for one thing. And it's really simple. You just...
Water,
sugar, and citrus peels. You just want to, like...
You simmer them for ages.
Well, actually, the recipe I followed, you cook them for 10 minutes, then you throw out that water, then you cook them for, well, however long it takes for it to form a thick syrup.
So you cook them again, but this time with water and sugar.
With water and sugar, right.
Right, because it's not going to form a syrup unless you add sugar.
Right. So it's equal parts water and sugar, enough to cover your peels, really.
Mm-hmm.
I had to fiddle with the amounts because I had a lot more peels than the recipe called for.
Right.
And super tasty. So then once I got my peels candied, I chopped up all the fruits that I'm going to use in my fruit cake, and I put them in a
big container
with some bourbon. You're supposed to soak them overnight. I think they've been in there like 3 or 4 days now.
Oh yes, they're very bourbony.
So they're going to be very, very bourbony. And I mean, you can use your favorite alcohol. My friend whose recipe I'm using actually uses sherry.
But don't use expensive alcohol because it's a waste. Just buy. No. We bought a bottle of Jim Beam. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not nice bourbon. It's decent.
Right.
I mean, you don't want to buy like rocket stuff.
Yeah. You don't want to buy the stuff that the guy on the corner is drinking. But you want you want like a Jim Beam. I don't know that I would do Jack Daniels. That would be a little different. Something like a VO Canadian whiskey. Yeah, the Jim Beam would be fine. Yeah. Try to think of other ones.
Yeah.
Wild Turkey. You ever did Wild Turkey once?
I might have.
Yeah.
Whatever's on sale.
Frankly. Wild Turkey's on the bottom end, but yeah.
Whatever's on sale.
Yeah.
I've tried other alcohols for fruitcake, and I keep coming back to bourbon because I guess I'm just a bourbon girl. I like that smooth bourbony taste. And really, whenever I'm cooking with booze, like baking with booze. Uh-huh. I find I like bourbon. Bourbon pecan pie, bourbon on my fruitcake. Right.
Well, bourbon has the
bourbon
most vanilla
in it. I think that's what it is. I really like those vanilla notes that bourbon has. And it's just, it's so fragrant.
If you want something more molassesy, well, the rum is your pick. But for any other sort of dessert alcohol, like a combination like that, like you could use a sherry or something like that for, like, if you want something more that's like a wine, more acidic. But if you want something that's, you know, a little bit smoky, a little bit of vanilla, yeah, I think a bourbon is your pick.
It's. So eventually that's going to become fruitcake. Nice. Probably tomorrow if I have time.
And it's the kind of fruitcake you want to eat, as opposed to the kind you keep want to give away. This is the kind you want.
So it's got maybe a third of the fruit is my candied citrus, orange, lemon, and lime rinds. Then I've also got dried cherries, currants, cranberries, dried blueberries, dried golden raisins, and then...
But none of the Day-Glo green and orange red stuff, like the commercial fruitcake.
Yeah, this is just like, you know, dried tart cherries, not
the stuff from the supermarket.
Red.
Yeah.
Right. And then, we had some bits of like dried pineapple and mango that the kids had used to like, and then they had stopped liking.
Mm-hmm.
I went ahead and diced those up and threw them in there.
Ooh.
And some figs that had been left over from a recipe. I love that slight crunch that the figs have. They're mm-hmm. so good. And the pineapple and mango, I think, will add a nice sort of little tropical note.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
So I'm looking forward to this. Fruitcake is one of my favorite things. Most of the kids don't like it. Anthony does.
I mean, it's really a modern version of the pudding, right? The Christmas pudding.
Right.
It's basically, except it's not boiled, it's baked.
Yeah, it's very similar to a Christmas pudding.
One of these years.
We're going to do a
solid English Christmas pudding.
But can I add more fruits? Does it just have to have raisins?
No. Yeah, we can have fruits. But, like, I mean, you could do a modern British pudding. But, I mean, they still make them today. And I'm sure they have versions with fruits. But I want to try the whole boiled pudding. I'm curious. Very curious. Anyway, that's... As we're getting ready for Christmas, by the time next podcast, we'll have had Christmas. So we should talk about what we're planning, and then we could talk about the execution of it. As usual, our Christmas Eve dinner, being Sicilian, we do seafood on Christmas Eve. And because we're in the Boston area, we're going to do lobster again. That's the tradition. The kids expect it every year. I may go broke buying lobster this year, but by golly, we're getting lobster. I'm not sure we're going to get the 7 fishes in, but we're going to get lobster. We got some frozen shrimp in the freezer, and we can maybe make fish cakes out of some leftover fish that we've got. I think
there might be some like other fishy things.
There's the lobster bites. I got them on sale. They're like boxed frozen stuff. They were selling them for cheap, and so I picked them up.
I think I might make a and some kind of fruit dish to go along with it. I'm thinking maybe cranberry sauce. The kids love cranberry sauce.
Cranberry sauce to go alongside lobster.
Don't you think? It could work.
Just as long as you don't put it on the lobster.
No.
Because that would be offensive. Yes, I will allow that. Your cranberry sauce. This is funny. So you've got, I used to hate fruitcake. I used to hate cranberry sauce. Now you got me loving fruitcake and loving cranberry sauce. You've really changed my taste buds. Mm-hmm. I like to eat fish now, although I did like sushi before I met you even, but you know, still. They say, you know, you shouldn't try to change a man, but you've changed me, at least my taste buds.
I tried to, though. That's the difference.
That's right. You just said, I'm going this way, and if you'd like to go,
I'm making this for me, and you don't have to eat it, but it's there.
This is what's for dinner. Okay, so let's talk about movies and books.
I thought we were going to talk about Christmas.
Right, of course. I mean, of course I was talking about Christmas. Sorry.
You said we were talking about Christmas.
Distracted. I got distracted by lobster. So that's Christmas Eve. And then Christmas Day, we've decided to go with lasagna.
I've decided that, you know, I want to.
You've decided
something.
To go with lasagna.
I said, what about lasagna? I did ask your,
you did ask my
your
opinion. And I even said, oh, no, we've talked about this before. We have very different ideas of what is allowable in lasagna. And for me, traditionally, lasagna has the noodle. It has the cheeses and it has sauce and parsley. and there's an egg in there to hold things together. But that's it. Whereas your lasagna, you have a lot more going on. And I said this year, I'm okay with the extras, including a little bit of spinach in the cheese.
A little bit. Not like gobs of spinach.
I don't like to have like a big gob of spinach on my fork.
No. Finely chopped.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yep. Which is essentially doing what the parsley does in mine.
Well, right. I mean, I usually add both spinach and parsley.
Sure.
But same idea.
Yep. Mushrooms?
If we have them around.
In the sauce?
I might throw them in the sauce.
Okay.
I don't always.
Meat? Like?
Well, I make a bolognese sauce.
Right. So it's a meat sauce.
For my lasagna. So it's a meat sauce.
Yep. I'm okay with that.
It should have meat. I don't know.
Right.
Cheese lasagna always feels like it's missing.
Not Francesca's. My sister Francesca's lasagna, it never feels like it's missing anything except more of it in my stomach. That's it.
It's missing the meat. Missing the meat.
Okay.
My mom always added hard salami.
I mean, it's hard to say no to salami.
Right.
Yeah.
She always chopped it up small and then added that to the cheese filling, like the ricotta.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my mom, being Texas in the, 70s and 80s, ended up using cottage cheese instead of ricotta. I'm not sure that ricotta was available.
Sure, sure.
I've gone back to ricotta.
Oh, well, yeah, that is a non-negotiable line too far.
Right. It took me a while, though, to get used to the texture difference with ricotta.
Uh-huh.
And so that, to me, is an adaptation, which I've, to my taste buds, which I've had to make. Yep. Now I've come to appreciate the ricotta and I like, excuse me, I like it, but that was
right. So difference. With the ricotta, you mix it with both Parmesan, grated Parmesan and grated mozzarella.
Right. And if you've got other cheeses, like you could add some Romano or,
sure.
You know, like
other
Italian cheese blend, throw it in there with the ricotta.
Yeah.
But yeah, you want it to add a little bit more creamy than just the ricotta.
Well, yeah, because the other cheeses, because the ricotta is a very soft, fresh cheese.
And it's kind of grainy.
Yeah, whereas what the other cheeses do, like a mozzarella or whatever, they give you the pull and the structure, like that they tie things together. So you need a little bit of both.
Right.
So it's nice. Mm. I'm looking forward to that.
And then when you make the layers too, you add, like, you do the layer of mozzarella.
Oh, yeah.
And the layer of ricotta. Like, those are two separate layers
as
well.
Yes.
Just
definitely.
To make it clear.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I like a slightly spicy sauce. A little bit of red pepper flakes in there.
Well, I do too.
Yeah.
It's whether the kids allow it.
they've actually, I've over time, I've added more and more kick to it. I think by this time, my pasta sauce is almost like, it's not quite puttanesca. level spice, but it's getting close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, too. That's going to be a nice Christmas dinner.
And for usually I end up doing some sort of a baked bread for Christmas morning breakfast. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do cinnamon rolls. Sometimes I do like a braided sweet bread thing. We'll see.
There is cinnamon coming, by the way, from Spice House. So it should be here in the next year.
I have had to, the last couple times I've needed cinnamon and recipes, I've had to grab the cinnamon stick in my grater and grating an entire teaspoon of cinnamon for the gingerbread was a workout. Let me tell you.
Could you get the spice grinder?
With the cinnamon sticks,
you
it doesn't.
Would pound up the cinnamon stick as small as you can and then throw it in the grinder. That might work.
That is a terribly inspiring.
You might have to sift some of the bigger chunks out.
Yeah,
it's worth a shot if you had to.
Maybe.
Anyway. Okay. Let's move on now to movies and reading and that sort of thing, books and things like that. So, as we've said, we're continuing to watch the Marvel movie cinematic universe with the kids as we go. We've made our way this week to Captain America, Avenger. How do you think they enjoyed that? They enjoyed it. I mean, it's clearly they were enjoying these movies.
Right. They seemed to have fun with it.
Wasn't as much chortling in laughter as with Thor or Iron Man.
Thor and Iron Man, I think, have more of the comic relief. Captain America is more just straight action adventure.
Yeah.
I think it's not. It doesn't have as many of the comic beats to it. And it's definitely got more of the romance beat than, Thor has a little bit of romance.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of romance in Iron Man. You start to see the beginning of the Pepper Potts relationship there. But you see more of Tony being the playboy. One thing that did get mentioned by the kids was the difference between, Tony Stark, playboy, and Steve Rogers, guy who can't get a date because he's too scrawny.
Right.
And I think that they saw, and I think that, you know, of course, his relationship with Agent Carter is like they have one kiss. That's it.
Right. And he's much more chivalrous. He's much more romantic than Tony.
And just in case you had forgotten that, we get Tony's dad in there who is almost as.
Yeah, he actually gives he walks on the first time you see him, he's giving a kiss to a showgirl.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're all like, oh, yeah, that's Tony's dad.
Right.
Yeah. So the Red Skull was a little bit I could tell Bella was getting a little.
She was a little bit nervous when he starts to peel off the skull.
She didn't want to see the peeling part. She was okay with seeing him with it off.
Right, she was okay to see, the bare skull, but watching him peel off his face was too much. And I agree, that's a bit much.
Yeah, it was fun seeing all of the little bits that relate to other things that eventually happen in the long tail of Marvel movies.
Right, like this is my second time seeing Captain America, and I feel like I definitely enjoyed it more than my first viewing.
The stuff with Bucky, you know, where you
start to see
the roots of what will come later, like even all the way to Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Right. Like Bucky seems like a much more interesting character. Like the first time I almost didn't notice him.
Right.
He's like just kind of Steve's friend. But this time through, like the scenes with Bucky felt much more poignant.
Yep.
And they had a much, much different appeal.
Right.
Effect.
And then Steve and Peggy making the date for the dance.
Oh, yeah.
So, which he eventually does, which he eventually makes at the end of Endgame.
At the very end.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. All those things. I could do this all day. That line, which he does several times in this movie, and then several times more going forward when he's fighting himself. I could do this all day. That was good. Yeah, there's a lot of little things in there that where you kind of notice, like, oh, right. That's that explains a lot. That's what I think. So, in fact, I kind of wish we'd had more stories about the World War II first, Captain America with that group of soldiers.
Right. I feel like there was almost a, like, they introduced all of these characters who
were straight out of the comic books.
Right. Didn't get named.
Right.
But
like Neil McDonough's character, very iconic character, the one with the bowler and the mustache.
Yes. The handlebar mustache. I was like, this guy needs a name and a backstory. Right. Like, and they all do
in the comics. Like the French guy, you get the French guy, you get the British guy.
They should go back and make some movies.
Or streaming episodes, streaming series.
Or a streaming series would be great.
Right. Like their exploits.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously that there's that long montage of him hunting down all the different Hydra bases.
Right.
Like, that could be a series in and of itself.
Well, in fact, I'm sorry. I'm recalling that they actually show up in an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Ooh, that's fun.
There's a time travel thing that happens, and they end up back in World War II, and they run into these guys. So that was pretty cool. In fact, does Agent Carter show up too? She might. I'm trying to remember now. It's been a while since I saw that. But
you know, I think at some point I'm going to go back and watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I saw a couple episodes with you, but I never really watched the series. Right.
The first half of the first season is not as good, partly because it turns out, and everyone was like, "Oh, this is lame." It turns out they needed to get to a point where they could sync up with what the movies were doing. They were waiting for the movie that was coming out, which might have been Dark World, which sets off everything, all the action for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then suddenly it makes more sense. The last few seasons were a couple seasons too many.
Uh-huh.
But those first three or four seasons were really good. Yeah. So I would check it out. So that's about the only extra thing I watched this week. I'm really struggling to keep up with all the things that I want to watch. Like all my regular shows, Wheel of Time is out, new episodes. The Witcher dropped a new season. The Expanse has a new season.
Oh, I watched the this week's episode of Hawkeye. We watched this week's episode of The Rookie.
Right. So we saw those. Yeah. I've watched my other, like I watch, I like to watch FBI. The other FBI shows I don't watch, but I just like the one FBI show, which can be lame, but it sometimes is fun. But yeah, I mean, there are shows I watch regularly, but anything I've talked about all those already, so I didn't want to bring it up. But one thing that's new this week for me is, well, not really new, but the second time I've done it, I started playing D&D, Dungeons & Dragons, with an online group, which is fun. So I played D&D when I was a kid. But apparently now, like it turns out, you can play D&D remotely with people. There's a website called Roll20, and it presents like the tabletop map, and the dungeon master can like put the figures on there and tell the story with imagery. Like he creates, there's a kobold over here, and you see a kobold appear on the map, and there's a blood trail where they've dragged the horse to their village, and you see the blood trail . And there's black spots where you can't see beyond because you can't see there because your vision doesn't reach that direction.
Yeah, my sister's done that a few times. During lockdown, like I think her D&D group moved to online. And she did some campaigns with like friends in other states, which she thought was really fun.
Yeah. And then there's a website called D&D Beyond, which keeps your character sheets and all your stuff like that. And you roll from there and it shows up on the two websites communicate. So it shows up there, and it's a lot of fun. And so I'm playing with Father Corey, Stika, mm-hmm. Will Duquette, Larry D, and Tom McDonald's son, who's joined us. And it's fun. They're creative, interesting. My character is a high elf battle master fighter, and you kind of come up with a backstory. So that was fun, writing a backstory for the character. And We did like 3 hours last night where we played.
Was it 3 hours? Wow.
Yeah. It went quick, but it was a lot of fun. So I'm enjoying that. I played rarely when I was a kid because it was hard to find a group of other guys usually at the time.
Other geeks
who wanted to play. And I had all the books and all the stuff. And of course I had to fight the thing where my mom thought it was demon worship because her evangelical Christian friend was convinced her that Dungeons and Dragons was of the devil and would lead me to Satan worship.
Uh huh.
So she threw all my books away at one point, and that was that. So it's nice. And of course, I'd mentioned before how I had been playing with the kids, but actually getting to be a player with an gives me a better understanding of how I should be doing this with the kids as opposed to the way I was doing it. So at some point we'll pick this up again with the kids. I think it'll be fun.
I think Bella's actually starting a online group.
Yes.
Through her homeschool group.
Yeah.
So that should be interesting too, to listen about to her adventures.
Right. Right. They do role playing, even like, just like, not like according to a rules based system, like a game, but they just roll, they have a role play, like I'm a rebel spy and
they just tell stories.
And they just tell stories. It's like cooperative storytelling, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they're getting to have some of that creative stuff, like not just with us, but and with each other, but like with other friends too.
So you mentioned that you watched a movie last night, you said?
Yeah, while you were playing D&D, I went to Amazon and started browsing around. And I stumbled across a movie made from a book that I'd read. It's Rumor Garden's Peacock Spring. I think it's Peacock Spring. It might be Peacock Summer. Pretty sure it's spring.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Which is one of her novels that's set in India. So she basically sort of wrote a bunch of books set in India, but then a bunch of books set in the UK. She grew up in India, but then was sent to England for school and then was sent back to India when the war started. Yeah. She was evacuated to India, essentially.
Okay.
So this story concerns two sisters who have been at boarding school in England. I think in England, maybe somewhere else, like Switzerland, who are being shipped off to India at the end of the school term, where their father works for the UN, but is stationed in India. And it turns out when they get to India that the reason their father has called them back to India is because he's seeing this Indian woman who he's now hired as a governess for his daughters to like give cover to his relationship with the.
And in order for her to be the governess, they have to be present.
Right. Like he has no really reason to have a relationship with this woman. So this gives him like cover before he eventually marries her. The daughters, one of the daughters really likes her and the other is very 15 and ambivalent. So it turns into a romance between the 15-year-old girl and the gardener, who it turns out isn't really a gardener. He's actually a poet. And it's kind of a troubling story, like many of Rumor Garden's Indian novels. Like, she's very much aware of the extreme tensions in India. And she's not always terribly favorable to the British in her depictions of the British in India, unlike some British writers. She kind of shows you a lot of the iniquities. So you have the 15-year-old girl falling in love with the gardener, getting pregnant, running off with him to his grandmother's house, and then her father hunts them down, of course, and the boyfriend ends up being persuaded to abandon her, essentially, because his career as a poet, his running for this particular poetry prize that he's trying to compete for, will be sunk if he doesn't. So then she's abandoned and sent back to her father, and she ends up having a miscarriage and then being sent back to boarding school, which is what she wanted to do anyway. She had been been angry at the governess for not actually being smart enough to teach her. Like, she was really mathematically gifted and the governess was not very good at math, so couldn't really help her.
Right.
She wanted to go to Oxford on a mathematics scholarship or something like that. it's a really sad story. It's very, very sad. And it's like the, I feel like the relationships among the characters really highlight the iniquities between, the inequalities between the British and the Indians and the political tensions. I mean, the reason this poet's being a gardener is because he had gotten involved in a dissident group. And
is he Indian?
He is Indian.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He had gotten involved in a dissident group and was like on the run from the law and hiding out,
mm-hmm.
pretending to be a gardener.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beautiful.
So recommended?
It's really beautiful cinematography. The subject matter is kind of disturbing, so I would recommend with caution, I suppose.
Okay.
Definitely not a story for
kids.
For kids, and yeah. I wouldn't really show it to teens either. Like, Bella is the age of the protagonist, but I certainly wouldn't think of it as an appropriate story for her to,
right.
to engage. I mean, it depends on the maturity of your teen, of course. Like, I'm sure there are teens who could handle the content level, but
yeah,
you know, I would say with caution and parental guidance, and maybe pre-watch it first.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was beautifully shot, and oh my gosh, some of the scenery was really lovely. The themes were really fascinating.
Madder Jaffrey is in it. Does she play the gardener's mom?
Oh, did she? Was she?
Yeah, she's in it. So Madder Jaffrey is a famous British Indian actress who is also famous as introduced Indian cooking to both the U.S. and Britain households.
Now I'm curious about which character she was.
We can look up on IMDb, yeah. But
I'm not sure if she was the mom, the grandmother, or the father, or the father's love interest.
Well, it was 1996. That's a good question. She'd be on the border between mom and grandmother, I would assume. So the Peacock Spring, 1996, and so where is Madder Jaffrey on this? I don't see her. She was listed on the Amazon page. So let's go to the cast, and like she probably has a tiny role, and they just like Lady Srinivasan.
Oh yeah, she's like the sort of high society Indian lady. Oh,
okay, Ravi Kapoor. I've seen him in stuff. I think.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So it. A well-known cast.
It was a pretty good cast, and
yeah.
It was really well shot.
Oh, Naveen Andrews. Saeed.
Oh.
Was he the gardener?
Yeah, he's totally the gardener.
Oh, Saeed
from Lost. I did not peg him. Yeah, he's totally smoking.
Yeah, Saeed was smoking too, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, funny. So a pre-lost Naveen Andrews.
A pre-lost Naveen. I did not recognize him. I mean, wow. Yeah.
That's funny. So we wanted to talk about Christmas books, too. We discovered the box of Christmas books in the pod. We were very happy that we got discovered yesterday. And we have a tradition about Christmas books.
Right.
Or custom, shall we say.
Or custom, I suppose. So, yeah, we have over the years collected a lot of Christmas themed
good Christmas books.
Good Christmas books.
Not just like tie-ins to existing properties, right. Sort of things. Yeah.
And so in various years I've done various things. Like one year I got super ambitious and actually wrapped them, and we unwrapped one for every day of
that's
Advent.
Very ambitious.
Super ambitious. Do not recommend. when you get excited about things that you read online and
oh, I want to do that. Yeah, you've committed yourself to something.
but having the box available and having the kids, like once the box has been unearthed from storage, it's a pretty self-perpetuating custom because they compete to go grab a book from the box to read. And it's really fun to see our favorite stories over and over again. When I say collected, like Saint Nicholas used to bring one Christmas book or two every year for St. Nicholas Day, plus sometimes they would get them for Christmas presents. And like over 15 years, we amassed quite a collection. I've kind of stopped acquiring more unless there's something that's really outstanding.
Right.
At some point, I've got a list of some of my favorites on my blog. And the kids are so excited to revisit all their favorites. We were kind of sad through most of Advent. We've had all of our books packed away. And so we finally found the box this week. And we're starting to, everyone's like, oh, look what I found.
And so
we have to read this one.
Reading one or two a day?
Yeah. Tonight we read one about St. Nicholas, and we read Bombinelli Sunday by Amy Wilburn.
Bombinelli Sunday. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Last night we read The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey, which is kind of a fun one.
Oh, that's also one
about
of my
the grumpy woodcarver who carves a nativity set. For the widow and her son.
Who's sweet on him.
Oh, yeah. It's cute. It's a sweet little romance. And I'm trying to remember what else. Hannah's Christmas by Melissa Wiley, is out of print.
With
The Tompton. That one really struck home this year because Hannah and her family have just moved from Sweden. And Hannah's mom says, oh, I'm not sure we're going to be able to have Santa Lucia Day this year because there's so much unpacking to do. And then the Tompton helps Hannah have for Santa Lucia Day, and her mom then gets into the Christmas spirit and says, oh, I don't need to do any unpacking. Let's get a Christmas tree and decorate the house for Christmas. And that really, really was like, yes, that's me. I'm Hannah's mom. Except I never tried to do the we don't have time for Christmas because we just strung the Christmas lights over the boxes.
Yes.
Because I've learned from Hannah's Christmas that, like, having Christmas, even in the midst of chaos, is important.
You still get it. Christmas comes whether you allow it to or not.
Right.
So
even in the middle of the mess.
Yes. Even in the mess. The Christmas comes. Jesus comes in the middle of our messes. And that is a great Christmas message.
And there have been a lot of years when I was pregnant.
You were pregnant with Lucy. You were pregnant with Anthony. You were pregnant with Ben. No.
Sophie.
Yes.
I've been pregnant at Christmas a lot.
Technically, you were probably pregnant with Ben, but you didn't know it.
I think I just found out, actually, and I was really feeling sick.
Oh, right. Pregnant with Bella. Actually, you've been pregnant at Christmas with all of our children.
Right. All of our kids were born in the first part of the year, and so I've been pregnant with all of them at Christmas time, which means that there have been a lot of Christmases when I did not have a lot of energy for doing lots at Christmas. So if you're at that point right now, it's okay. It's okay to have a very low key, I'm not doing anything Christmas, because carrying a baby is like the most Christmassy thing you can possibly do. You are imitating Mary, bringing life into the world. And that itself is Christmas.
A big part of that is managing the children's expectations of what they're going to get or do.
Right.
We've always kept the present part of it low key.
The present and the baking and the traditions. Like, I enjoy baking at Christmas. Some years I bake one thing.
Right.
This year I want to bake all the things, but that's kind of a rarity. And also, I don't have any kids under the age of 8 right now. When I had younger kids, like, if we got one batch of cookies made during the entire Christmas season, and I'm talking about, like,
After Christmas
was sometimes when things would get baked, not before Christmas, then we're doing good. And sometimes Christmas presents have been very, very, very minimal and modest and basic. Yeah. I mean, I think Bella's first and second Christmas, she got, like, a toy, a book.
First and second Christmas, like, what? Like, they don't even realize that today is a different day than any other day, especially the first Christmas.
Right.
Yeah. But so
it's okay. It's okay to be small. It's okay to be humble, because Jesus's first Christmas was really small and humble.
Yeah.
And
you get to Mass. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
You don't
get to Mass, sometimes that happens. Right. When I was pregnant with Lucy that year, I had the stomach flu.
Right.
And I was 9 months pregnant, and Mass did not happen, and neither did Christmas dinner.
Right.
You took the kids to your brother's for Christmas dinner, and I stayed home and, like.
Right. Well, that's when we were still going to my brother's for Christmas dinner anyway. So, yeah.
But
if we'd stayed home, I would have made something and we would have been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christmas happens whether you're ready or not. And, right. And I'm embracing the chaos this year because it's
Christmas happens whether you're ready or not. How you react to it is entirely up to you.
Yeah.
How you react to your circumstance. And so that's fine. All right. We're at 1 hour now. I want to talk before we go about the homily today, which was really good. So it's the fourth Sunday of Advent. Father Willie Raymond, who you might know from the family theater productions. What is it, the order?
Holy Cross Fathers.
Holy Cross Fathers. Ugh, can never remember that. Anyway, he says Mass at our parish a lot. And we were talking about today was the visitation, the gospel of the visitation. I'm sure you remember. And he was talking about, among other things, Mary going up to see Elizabeth was the first Eucharistic procession.
Yeah, he said that was from Pope Benedict's book, Jesus of Nazareth.
Right.
This was Pope Benedict's insight.
We keep endeavoring to read at dinner for Advent every year. This year it didn't happen at all. But in the past years, we've tried. We should try it again.
Yeah. I mean, even if you read just a few snippets here and there, it's really worthwhile. And each individual section kind of stands alone as a meditation on the scriptures. So you don't have to read the whole book in order to get something out of it.
In any case. So I really like that idea of Mary going up to see Elizabeth was the first Eucharistic procession.
I know. It's awesome.
The first benediction was Eucharistic benediction was Elizabeth's prayer and greeting, the blessing. Blessed are you among women. And that Elizabeth and John were the first Eucharistic adorers. You know, John first of all, the leaping in Elizabeth's womb. So I really liked that idea. Like, it was a very profoundly Eucharistic. And what was Father's overall point that he was making about just kind of like what we were just saying? Whether you're ready or not, Christmas is coming, and make the most of it. Just make the most of it of wherever you are, whatever you've got. Just make the most of it. So it was really good. And then there was a whole story he told about someone getting a half price dinner, and I totally was spaced out on that. And everyone went, "Oh, ha ha!" And I'm like, "What did I miss?"
I missed the part where he tied it in, but the story was cute. It was about an electrician who had done some electrical work at a restaurant, and afterward, he and his wife ate at the restaurant. I'm not sure if he stayed and she came and joined him. I missed that part. But then the bill came and it was like 50% off. And he was so grateful and impressed. He went and thanked the waiter. He thanked the maitre d'. He wrote a note to the owner of the restaurant. He went into this kitchen and thanked all the kitchen staff personally. And he pledged to the owner that the next time he needed work done, he would do it for 50% off, and just so effusively grateful. And when he got to the maitre d' said, you know, well, everybody in the restaurant got 50% off. We always do 50% off on Tuesdays, but you're the first person to ever be so
whoever thanked us
thankful and enthusiastic about this. I really liked that story because, you know, God gives us good things whether we're thankful or not.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to decide, what is my attitude going to be? Am I just going to say, well, it's 50% off Tuesday, so we always get 50% off dinner? Or are we, like, grateful for the good things that we've got?
Well, this is what we're always telling the kids. Like, you know, you hit, like, I'm hungry. Okay, here's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Thank you is what you meant to say. Like, you have an attitude of gratitude. Be grateful. Show your gratitude. It's understood. I know you're thankful. I know it, but you need to be polite and to show your gratitude. And the same thing is true of us with God. Like, praise God for all your blessings, even the things, the air you breathe, the sun in the sky, all those things, everything comes from God. And we have to praise God for them and thank him for the blessings he gives.
And we've made that a part of our family's bedtime prayer. We always go around the room and everybody says at least one thing that they want to thank God for from that day.
Right.
And sometimes it's like nice things that happened today, but sometimes it's, you know, thank you God for our house. Thank you God for food to eat. Mm-hmm. You know, thank you God for our health. And sometimes the kids can be amazingly profound in what mm-hmm. they thank God for.
And sometimes it's, you know, the same thing that they've said every day for 100 days in a row.
Yes, there was one child who thanked God for
yummy sky and cookies.
Yummy sky and cookies every single day for more than a year.
That child has progressed on to, because like, that's the other thing is you just let it go. Let it go, because eventually they will move out of a phase.
Right.
You can encourage them to as well.
Thank you, God, for a yummy dinner and a good day is another child's pat every single night.
And once in a while, it's like, and, you know, what about today was good? You know, if you're feeling a little like, you know, if you're not feeling, I just need to get this over with and get him to bed. If you get a little extra moment, maybe to kind of try to draw something out of them. But, you know, even that prayer is fine for yummy dinner and a good day.
And I have to say, during the last 2 months, I've remembered one scene. It's one of my favorite scenes from Corrie Ten Boom's autobiographical memoir, The Hiding Place.
Uh-huh.
She was a resistance fighter during World War II in Holland, and she and her sister were eventually jailed and sent to prison camp by the Nazis. And her sister is very religious and is, you know, thanking God for everything, you know, for everything in every season and all times, even in the concentration camp. And she finally gets a little bit fed up with her sister's like perpetually thankful attitude and says, "But what about the fleas? You can't possibly be thankful about the fleas." And her sister says, "Yes, thank God for the fleas." Well, Corrie tells a story about how she found out later that, in fact, she and her sister had been holding like prayer meetings and reciting from memory the Bible with women in their bunkhouse. And for some reason, the guards did not like to come into the bunkhouse, and so they were free to have these meetings. And it turned out the reason the guards would not come into the bunkhouse was the fleas.
So thank God for the
fleas. So the fleas were, in fact, the way God gave them room to pray and praise him.
Mm.
Which I love that story. And I have been, you know, thanking God for the fleas a little bit in the past 2 months.
Yes.
It's hard. It's hard to be thankful when it feels like everything is falling down around you, and when it feels like this is not really something I want to thank God for.
Right.
But there are hidden blessings even in our trials, and sometimes things which at the time seem horrific do turn out to have been something that God had a plan for.
But there are also times, well, God has a plan, period.
Right.
There but are times when bad things that have no outwardly good value happen, and I still praise and thank God.
Right.
You know, good people die for seemingly unknown reasons, and I trust in God and I give him thanks for the life of that person that we had with us, that sort of thing.
Right.
You can't even, because it can be a little pat, like, oh, God makes everything, you know, you never know the good thing that's going to happen. Sometimes there's not a good thing that happens.
Right.
You know, like so.
But every once in a while, God sort of shows you that there is a, you know, a greater purpose.
But even when he doesn't, still bless God.
Right.
That's the important lesson. All right. Let's take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Rosemary P., Matthew G., Bob M., Matthew P., and Paul B. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. We'd love to hear from you, get your feedback. You can comment at sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And we'll have links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com. Remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Retweet us on Twitter where we're at SQPN, and leave us comments in those places too. Until next time, I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest, and Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Hi, everyone. This is Dom Bettinelli, CEO of StarQuest, with a special message as we approach the Christmas season. This past year, the StarQuest Network has continued to expand our mission of exploring the intersection of faith and pop culture through our many entertaining and informative programs. Now we need your generous financial support to reach new audiences with more of the life-changing and uplifting programming we've been creating for more than a decade. That's why it's very important that we hear from you this Advent and Christmas, the time when nonprofits receive most of their support for the year. If you are already a supporter of StarQuest, we thank you and ask you to prayerfully consider increasing your support at this time. If you're not yet a supporter, please become one now. Every gift counts. Could you give $15 or even just $10 per month? Whatever level of support you can offer, please show your support for SQPN this Christmas. And remember that your gifts may be tax deductible. Just go to sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give. May God bless you this Advent, and may you have a blessed Christmas season.